All right, we're back now. 7 minutes after 2 o'clock. You got it on K-Hom's Radio Without the Rules. Congressman Jared Huffman is here in the studio with us. It's nice to see your smiling face once again.
Thank you. Great to be back.
Thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure. And I would say that there's a way to go before your term has expired. But so far, you are making good on your campaign promise to not forget the North Coast once you got into Congress. So.
Well, and it's an easy promise to keep because the North Coast is a place that I actually like a lot. So happy to be here.
Thank you. We rolled out our best North Coast weather for you.
Yeah, it's the fog is coming in.
So let's talk first of all about the reason why you're in town. Yeah. And that is to attend the ribbon-cutting ceremony for the new Open Door facility in Myrtletown.
Yes, very, very exciting occasion. We get to cut the ribbon on a facility that's going to roughly double the capacity of this community health clinic. It benefited from about $9 million in funding from the Affordable Care Act. And Congressman Mike Thompson had a big role in making that happen. He won't be able to be here, unfortunately, but I hope everybody understands that he really worked hard to make this happen for the community.
Yeah, he's been a handyman in a bunch of situations up here. But now after the redistricting, you are a representative. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the funding for this, because to me it's an interesting way that this came about. People know the Open Door Clinic has been around here for a long time. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that there was some funding that came from Obamacare, but also there's local funding from the AEDC,
right.
The Headwaters Fund and the Humboldt Area Foundation.
Yeah.
And it is kind of it's an interesting way that the federal dollars are, that the local community takes a stake in it as well.
That's right. There will be a lot of people there to celebrate today. The Humboldt Area Foundation, Headwaters, the Open Door Clinic put together a capital campaign that came up with about $4 million on top of what was secured through the Affordable Care Act. So, like any project of this type, there were all sorts of different funding sources. And, it's on time. It's on budget. It's going to be great for the community.
It's extremely on time. I mean, from the inception to today's ribbon cutting was, I think, 30 months or something like
yeah.
that was what I read, which
yeah.
is really, people talk about how slow things move, and sometimes they do, but this is not an example of it. I wanted to sort of talk about this in a larger context of healthcare, because mm-hmm. I know that's something that you care about, and it's an issue that I think about a lot.
Yeah.
And we're seeing... I'll just use the term Obamacare. I think Obama uses it. So
sure. It's not a pejorative.
It's not a pejorative. As Obamacare is rolling out and significant things happen this year as the legislation becomes implemented, first of all, how do you feel about it? Do you think that it's sort of on schedule and it's going to solve the problems that it was intended to?
Well, it's a huge transition, a transformation, if you will. And so I am sure we're going to see some bumps in the road. But I think for the most part, it is on schedule. There is some additional funding that the president had requested that has not been authorized yet by Congress. I'd like to see that authorized in the months ahead. We know that rolling out of these exchanges in September, October this year is going to be a big, big deal. We really need to get the word out to folks who are eligible to sign up. And I got a briefing on this last week. I think the administration and the various state exchanges are doing a good job. I think you're going to see a pretty user-friendly process that is unveiled in the months ahead. And so, I hope through this station and through my office and everyone else that we all do what we can to get the word out about signing up for these exchanges.
There's been some criticism in the press, even from folks who have been previously positively disposed towards Obamacare, specifically about the rolling out of the exchanges.
Yeah.
Complaints that they're way behind time, that there's confusion in the way it's being implemented, and these states have a great deal to say about how these things are rolled out. It's not just a one size fit all federal mandate. So how is California doing in the establishment of the exchanges?
Well, I think California is ahead of the curve. We put our legislation in place back when I was in the state assembly, well over a couple of years ago, and our insurance commissioner Dave Jones has been doing a lot of work to get this up and running. So I really think this should go well. I hope it will go well. Certainly my office is going to be very engaged, and we're going to be a resource for folks if they have questions and problems along the way.
That's another aspect of it as this rolls out. I mean, I pay attention to these things quite a bit. I just, because of my job on the radio, and also because it affects me personally, as it does everybody. Mm-hmm. And I'm confused as to how things are going to work. I mean, what can Congress do, and what can local governments do to make sure that people know exactly what they need to do and right. how they can do it?
Probably the most important thing right now is just to get information out there, because you're right. There's a lot of stuff swirling around on radio stations other than this one about what a train wreck this is going to be. A lot of misinformation. I talk to people in small businesses who believe somehow this is going to hit them with all sorts of cost and trapdoor policies that really aren't the case once you dig into it. So the administration is putting information out now. They have an online portal that answers most of these questions. And my office is going to get involved, and I think all of us will just have to try to point people to where the information is. The answers are usually good news. When you hear these things, and we've fielded all sorts of concerns and questions from people, and I know that there's going to be more ahead, but I think there are really good answers. I think people are going to like what they see in the months ahead.
I know that some people in Congress have put together sort of town hall type meetings with yeah. members of their staff and experts. Do you anticipate doing things like that?
We are going to do things like that. Now, whether that's a telephone town hall, whether it's public meetings, workshops, we'll figure that out in the weeks and months ahead. But absolutely, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure people are not confused, that they get directed to where they can get their needs met. This should be a very good thing. And I think what we're celebrating today with the Open Door Clinic is a great example of it. You're bringing millions of Americans into insurance coverage that didn't have it before. So that's positive. But in order to provide the access that they're going to need for preventive care and wellness, you need things like these community clinics and like more primary care and preventive care.
I want to ask one sort of general question about the healthcare legislation before we move on to some other topics. I mean, the way that I have boiled it down in my own mind is that what we need is a situation in which a person with a normal job and a normal income can afford healthcare. And I think that, at least in my case, and in a lot of people, the case of a lot of people I talk to, even folks with insurance, such as myself, that's not the case. I cannot afford a lot of health care.
Right.
It's just beyond my budget. And do you think that the Affordable Care Act is going to get us there? And if not, what do we need to do to get there?
Well, the Affordable Care Act is going to help, but it's not the panacea to the whole problem. We do have a health care system that has seen spiraling out of control costs because we have this fee-for-service type of health care where it's not well integrated. It's not really based on making people well and getting good outcomes. In many cases, it's driven by how many procedures different parts of the healthcare system can perform so that they can get compensated. So we got a long way to go in that regard, but the Affordable Care Act really makes some important steps in that direction. And we'll keep working on it as we go forward.
My sense has been that the Affordable Care Act does make a lot of differences in terms of access to insurance, but it doesn't do very much in terms of cost control.
Well, it starts down the path by looking at these ACOs, as we call them, accountable care organizations, trying some different models of compensating health providers for payment. We've got a lot more to do. I think Medicare can have a huge role in this regard. It's the biggest payer in our healthcare system. But this is really the next challenge that we have to bring the costs under control, is to change the way we compensate for and incentivize the provision of healthcare.
Yeah, it's a big job because there's a lot of, as you know, entrenched interests and just history of doing things this way. You mentioned something about Medicare and Medicaid, mm-hmm. and as you know, the proposed budget request out of the White House includes some things some cuts to Medicare and particularly in Social Security and the chain CPI that you have said on numerous occasions that you're opposed to.
Right. I do not support reducing benefits for seniors in either Social Security or Medicare.
Is that a deal breaker for you? I mean, if the budget that comes out of legislation has that in there, is that...
Let's be real honest. It's a hypothetical deal breaker. The deal that the president has put on the table is contingent on hundreds of billions of dollars in new tax revenues that the Republicans have said are not going to happen.
Right.
So... it certainly has caused a lot of concern for folks that are on fixed income that depend on these periodic inflation adjustments for both Social Security and other means-tested programs. This also includes things like veterans' disability benefits. There are all sorts of programs that would be affected by chain CPI. But I do think it's very unlikely to be part of any type of deal this year because I don't see the pieces in place to get the revenue on the table from the Republican side.
Some people have speculated, because this is, I mean, the chain CPI in particular is something that's very unpopular across a large swath of members of your party. And some people have speculated that that's included in the Obama budget request as a political device more than a practical policy suggestion. What do you think about that?
Well, I've heard lots of theories about how this made it into President Obama's budget proposal. I don't know very many people, in fact, I'm not sure I know anyone who think it was good strategy for the president to put this forward. So I don't know. Whatever the reason is, it's something that is not going to have much support in the Democratic Party. I can tell you that from having sat in numerous caucus meetings where we discussed this. And the corresponding tax increases that are necessary to get the president to the deal that he's proposing aren't going to happen on the Republican side. So I don't know what this has really accomplished. I think it was a bad move to put it out in his budget. There are some things we can do to achieve major deficit reduction and to help stabilize Social Security and Medicare for the long haul. But starting with this kind of gimmicky way to reduce benefits to seniors is not really productive or acceptable, in my view.
It's confusing to me, but I don't know all the ins and outs of the way the process works up there. Moving on to other things, you can drive down a country road a little north of here, and you'll see some dams along the Klamath, dams that are at least in some respects slated to be removed. They still stand. And there was an article in the Wall Street Journal a little while ago, last week I think it was, talking about the deal to remove those dams, which is part of a larger sort of water allocation arrangement that had been come through. The article in the Wall Street Journal suggests that now, especially in light of the dry winter we've had, and there will be renewed fights for these water allocations, and that this deal is basically off the table. It hasn't ever received congressional sanction for reasons that you know. And I was just wondering if you had any thoughts on that.
Well, you know, the irony is it is shaping up to be a dry year, but the Klamath irrigators in Oregon, who are parties to this deal, who you would think would be most sensitive to that, were in my office a couple weeks ago. I've been meeting with all the different parties and stakeholders over the last few weeks, and they're more motivated than ever to move this forward and to plow ahead, because this deal provides them the certainty that they don't have right now. There are just all sorts of things, ranging from the Endangered Species Act to certain water proceedings going on in the state of Oregon, some water proceedings going on with our state water board here in California, that leave them with tremendous uncertainty year to year about how much water they're going to have, therefore how much crops they can plant, what kind of lending they can get from their bankers, and so forth. So, you know, as with just about anybody you talk to in agriculture or business generally, certainty is a really valuable thing. And so I was impressed with how seriously committed to the agreement they seemed. And I've gotten similar messages from the fishing groups and the tribes, certainly the County of Humboldt and other parties to the settlement. So I wouldn't necessarily take from that Wall Street Journal article that this deal is somehow in grave jeopardy. I think the parties to it are reaffirming it, are wanting to move forward. The problem is it's been structured to require congressional approval. And congressional politics are the toughest piece of it right now.
Well, I was thinking about this, it occurred to me that if it received congressional approval, then that would be that would provide incentive for the parties to work out the remaining differences and sort of accept it kind of as fait accompli. But it really works the other way around, doesn't it? I mean, you're not going to get congressional approval until you have the parties on the same page.
Well, you're probably never going to see more of a parties on the same page situation than you have right now, than you have had for several years. I mean, you're talking about over 50 diverse parties that have signed on to this agreement, ranging from the dam owner to federal agencies to all sorts of stakeholders, tribes that have fishing rights on the river. And yet it still is not lining up in Congress. And part of that has to do with the fact that you've got folks like the chairman of the Water and Power Subcommittee, Tom McClintock, who is just dogmatically opposed to dam removal. He thinks it's a terrible idea. And he's not very sympathetic to, you know, those of us on the North Coast that care about the health of rivers and salmon fisheries.
Okay. All right. Well, and I know you've got a tight timetable, so we'll wrap this up. But you just wrapped up not too long ago your first 100 days in Congress.
Yeah.
And how's the California Coastal National Monument Expansion Act going? Is that
that's my first bill. Two early bills. One of them to help refinance a loan for commercial fishermen, including groundfish folks here in Humboldt County. The other one being an attempt to take some land on the Mendocino Coast and make it a land-based addition to the California Coastal National Monument. And for folks who don't know what that is, Bill Clinton, during his administration, designated all of the rookeries and rocks and islands along the California coast, the entire California coast, as part of this national monument, meaning it will have permanent protection from development. But there's never been any land added to that. And this area of land called the Storneta Public Land on the Mendocino Coast is this amazing area that includes the mouth of the Garcia River and would connect up about 10 miles of the California Coastal Trail, widely supported as something we need to permanently protect. And so far, the signals are good out of the administration. We're hoping to get some high-level officials out for a visit in the weeks ahead.
I saw a companion bill had been introduced in the Senate, but also that you had... You, and this is something I don't understand, because I don't understand the process, but you would also send a letter to the Obama administration, mm-hmm. urging them to enact this by executive order.
They can do. It's a two-part strategy. So we're going to move legislation as far as we can. I hope I'll get a hearing on it. I hope I'll get a markup and the bill can proceed. But if we don't, and you know, frankly, some of my Republican colleagues have been critical of these national monument designations. The Antiquities Act of 1906 is where all this comes from, and this is you know, a wonderful piece of American history. Teddy Roosevelt used this to save the Grand Canyon, but this is not the Republican Party of Teddy Roosevelt today, and many of my Republican colleagues are very critical of conserving public lands using this particular authority. So if we can't move it forward through Congress, the Obama administration fortunately has the same executive authority Teddy Roosevelt had in back 100 years ago, and they can do this with that authority, and we'll push on both fronts.
Okay, I see. And then just finally, what are some of your priorities for the next 100 days and going forward?
Yeah. Well, the next 100 days, unfortunately, we'll continue to see more of these manufactured fiscal and budget crises. We can't seem to get a budget in place, even though we have three budgets now on the table, the President, the Senate, and the House Paul Ryan budget. In order to work it out and have a federal budget, you have to appoint a conference committee. And right now, Speaker Boehner won't do it. He's afraid we might actually cut a deal, I suppose. So that's frustrating. And what it means is that we'll have another fight over the debt ceiling when that begins to expire a couple of months from now. We'll have another fight when this continuing resolution that's temporarily funding the government expires in September, and so on and so forth. And meanwhile, the horrible sequester cuts will roll out, and Congress will probably act, you know, when it's forced to act, as it did last week on the airport issue.
All right, we could talk for the rest of the afternoon.
We could. It wouldn't be a happy conversation, but unfortunately, you asked the next 100 days. It'll be that fire drill, probably consuming a lot of time, but also trying to move forward on these environmental policies and pass my legislation to help commercial fishermen.
Okay. I mean, lastly, it may be too early to ask this question because you're still sort of settling in, but is going into that sort of environment like you just described, mm-hmm. is that more frustrating than you were expecting, or is it kind
of? Oh, I had full disclosure. Everybody knew how dysfunctional Congress was. So, no, I'm not surprised by that. I'm not overwhelmed or overly dismayed by it. It's just the way it is. We need to make it better. It's going to take some time. And in the meantime, I'm going to try to get as much done as I can.
All right. Congressman Jared Huffman, thank you so much for coming back to the North Coast, and thanks for coming to KAM.
Thanks for having me.
You've got a friend here.